Hey guys, it's Sam, and this is another episode of And Sometimes There's Scotch Horror Review. I'm, of course, Sam, and with me today is...
I'm Bill.
From Tuning Japanese fame! And I think you did a few episodes of,
I was on Here for the Omen, too.
Yeah, you were on Here for the Omen, the Cursed Omen episode.
The Cursed Omen episode.
Yeah, so hopefully this episode doesn't
the
get
The Lost
cursed.
Episode.
The Lost episode. Zoe and I have a theory that, like, the reason things have never gone, like, tits up with, Andrew's podcast with you on it is that somehow, like, you're some kind of technological, like, jinx when it comes to audio, and, like, Josh is, for whatever reason, the thing that prevents that from happening.
Oh, no, no. If that's true, Andrew is the preventative.
Oh, yeah, because that one episode you recorded with Josh.
That one episode Josh recorded himself.
And you're like, dude, that's not doing anything.
I was like, I'm not an audio expert, but that does not look right as a WAV file.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's fine. No, I hooked up the WAV file. Can't hear Bill.
No, duh.
So, no, Andrew is the
counterpoint
to my jinxing.
All right, well, I mean, we were trying to figure out a reason why Josh is still on the show.
Momentum, I guess.
Momentum?
Yeah.
You came in here like a wrecking ball.
Well, emotional momentum. Like, he's been on a lot of episodes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So. Oh, all right, all right. All right, that makes sense.
Institutional momentum, maybe?
Maybe. So, yeah. You're on the show today. We're not doing a remake versus original like we normally do on this show.
Only in the sense that we both read the story.
We both read the story, yeah. So, we are going to be talking about Rawhead Rex, who, for those of you who don't know, is the most amazing Clive Barker movie ever made in the history of forever. People argue with me that it's actually Nightbreed. No, it is not Nightbreed. It is Rawhead Rex.
You crack the door, let some of that sarcasm out.
Yeah. No, I'm serious about that! Like... I like shitty B-movies, and I love Clive Barker, and this is like a marriage.
I mean, I suppose amazing is a word you could use.
It's like if Troma got a hold of it.
This is sub-Troma to me, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I can kind of see it. Before we get into the story of Rawhead Rex, guys, I found this amazing quote from Clive Barker about the monster. If I can pull it up on my phone really quick. Because, like, it's... The story's good. The movie's not so much. Like, he had nothing to do with it other than it's his characters. Because there's a lot of, like, articles about Rawhead Rex where...
A loose skeleton.
Loose skeleton. Like, he wasn't involved in the process making at all. But he's like, here we go. Monsters on the Rampage stories are about the phallic principle. Large males run around terrorizing women. Basically, I wrote a story about a 10-foot prick who goes on a rampage. I even put it in the title, Rawhead Rex. And there's a scene about two-thirds of the way through where the vicar has an image of a skinned dick in his head. I thought, what's going to destroy a 10-foot dick? So I made this guy absolutely scared of vagina dentata. It'll be bested by the image of a rampant female sexuality, and it'll say, get me the fuck out of here. Now, the gag only works if you understand the subtext. Otherwise, it's about this dumb monster running around. I couldn't get them to understand the whole movie had the smell of sex. When this thing appeared, you had to think it was a dick, but they didn't get the joke. I drew this big dick, and they said, it looks like a dark dick to us. I said, you've got it. They thought more Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I knew I was in trouble. They got this German ski instructor who was 6'3", with bigger pectorals than Linda Evans. His tits overshadowed his navel. They got it all wrong. I wind up them a little bit, and they said, get out of our face.
Huh.
So Barker went into this, being like, this is a dick monster.
Which is why I was asking about the appropriateness when we first watched the movie.
Yeah, because you've got your daughter Gracie.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure she was out of the room if this was going to be just a penis fest.
Yeah.
In which case, it didn't matter. She's on the Kindle in the kitchen anyway, yeah. But no, sexuality was almost entirely absent from this movie.
It really was, and that was a big part of the short story. of Rawhead Rex. So, I mean, there's a lot of good potential with that movie that could have been. So do we want to talk about the could-have-beens, or do we want to talk about the movie as is first?
I think we should save the fan remake to the end.
Right. Okay. So Rawhead Rex opens with this man driving along the Irish Scottish. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where it is.
Ireland. They're not.
The Iron.
And that's
we'll delete this.
That's okay. One of the first early changes too.
Yeah, you were mentioning that.
It was outside of London in the story.
Yeah, but
this was probably a good choice, actually.
Yeah,
putting it in Ireland or Scotland if they went that way.
Right.
Divorces it really kind of from, you know, the whole Anglo area.
Right.
And really kind of makes this a Celtic pagan monster demigod whatever.
Right. Well, in the movie. He came across as being more like a devil more than anything. They didn't really, like, mention him as being a demigod from another pantheon at all. Whereas in the book, it's very much that, you know, Rawhead Rex is a demigod.
Right. And they drop, I mean, that's it. They kind of took the idea of the book, put it in a better place for the creature in the book,
mm-hmm.
and then dropped the ball of explaining why they put it there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, anyways, you have this man driving along the Irish countryside to a church. Meanwhile, while he's at this church taking photos because he's a photographer, do you think he's writing a book?
They don't give you a real clear estimate of who he is. He's a journalist or a author. He's involved in some sort of anthropological study.
Yeah.
In that he is obsessed with the idea that these churches were built on pre-existing pagan sacred sites.
Yeah. And the particular one that he's looking at where Rawhead resides at is supposedly a fertility cult.
Yeah.
I think they kind of briefly shoehorned
that. They say that very, very late in the movie that it was
right.
Possibly some kind of fertility goddess cult.
Well, and even later in the movie, that's when we finally discover that the photographer's name is Howard Hollenbach.
They take a long time.
Yeah, it's a really long time before you discover that even. So, but moving on, he's there to take photos of the church and learn about the, he wanted the records to look through.
Yeah, the original building plans and church records. And
yeah, and he can't find it because of the deacon or Delkin.
I don't know what he was supposed to be because I would say he's probably not a deacon.
Right.
I think that's more, and forgive me here.
Okay.
That's probably more of a Protestant thing.
Right.
And this church was either Catholic or Anglican.
Right.
Which is odd because the priest in question wasn't wearing the little white square
collar. I told you it was Casual Friday.
It must have been.
It was Casual Friday all the time.
It's like it fell off the costume and they just didn't bother to put it back on.
You know what? I think that might be the reason. Like, there was really no real reason for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the
but he's being weird and evasive.
Very.
And honestly, structurally, I don't understand why.
No.
Because he doesn't have his encounter till later.
Exactly. And I mean, I feel like that could have been something that they could have worked on in the story, is explain, like, why this particular individual of the church was so enthralled with Rawhead. Even if it was, like, a quick flashback of, okay, this is why.
Well, in this scene, we see him touch the altar.
Yeah.
And the red come up.
Yeah.
But that doesn't even make sense. No. Because that was the MacGuffin that comes up later.
Mm.
Not to spoil it too early.
Yeah, right.
But there's no reason that the altar and the MacGuffin should have been the thing to attach this priest to Rawhead.
That's true.
Unless he was worshiping him from a long time back, maybe.
Right. Well, and if that was the thing that brought the priest to worship Rawhead in the first... You're right. Like, if that was the thing that was supposed to, like, bring him closer to Rawhead, it would have happened to the, like, head of the church as well. Because at some point in the movie, he touches that same altar.
Right.
And he gets burned from it, so...
Well, you're the protagonist.
Yeah. So, anyways, he goes to take photographs of the church. Meanwhile, there's, like, these guys trying to excavate this totem pole thing.
Yeah, they're trying to clear a field of rocks.
Yeah.
For farming purposes.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a... what's very clearly a penis.
Yeah.
A big stone penis standing straight up in the middle of his field.
Yeah.
With carvings on it.
Yeah.
And really, you think that would become, like, some sort of a preserved site.
It's not. It's not at all, guys.
Yeah. I mean, This is the 80s. It's not... Yeah, people tore up stuff and dug up rocks and destroyed monuments, but this wasn't hidden.
No.
It was clearly a monument.
Yeah.
I just can't understand the logic of that. Oh, we're just going to tear this big penis totem pole down.
Yeah. And it's... Yeah, no, it had carvings on it. Noticeable carvings. It wasn't like, you know, random rock formations and, you know...
One very notable carving that comes into play later.
Right. Exactly. So then they knock down this totem pole and Rawhead is released. Because apparently this totem pole has kept Rawhead underground for years.
And see, this is weird to me too. Okay. So,
go ahead.
I guess we're going to really pick this movie apart, aren't we?
We are, dude. It's fine. Because this is the kind of movie to do it to.
Because they can't do it. They've got attached to a tractor and they can't get this thing pulled up.
Right.
And then a storm rolls in. This is about the time we cut away to the priest getting the red light from the altar.
Yeah.
And we come back to a storm. That's what releases Rawhead as the totem pole falls. But it's not like he even got up from underneath it.
No.
Like, it fell. And then another shot where we don't see the totem or anything about it, he comes out of the ground.
He's just like, rawr.
Yeah, so he's, you know, at least, you know, 10 yards away. Out of sight of this whole rolling field and fence and stuff.
Right.
He stands up. So it was poorly shot, I think.
Very poorly shot. Well, and that's kind of a theme in this movie.
It is.
It is. It really is. There's also, in the church, the stained glass window of Rawhead.
Yeah, which is...
really disturbing that they would have it in the church in the first place. And I like how the head of the church, when Howard is asking him, and it's later on in the movie, guys, he's asking him about the stained glass windows because he's really curious about the Rawhead one. Like, the priest is just like, oh yeah, this place has been torn down and rebuilt 1,000 times. Like, this might not be the original stained glass.
Well, I think he said it was all original stained glass.
Yeah.
It's just that they pieced it back together.
Right. And I'm not a churchgoer by any means, but I feel like stained glass windows are something they take pride in. I don't know.
Absolutely. So, and I guess I kind of understand having your figure, you know, trouncing on a devil.
Right.
But what was in the stained glass originally?
Yeah.
Once, again, towards the end of the movie, was very unchristian, and they probably wouldn't have bothered with the stained glass of that image.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just poorly executed.
No, and they don't explain, like, that this wasn't originally a church. It was not originally, like, a Catholic or Christian church in any way. Like, they don't until, like, the very end when they're just like, oh, yeah, no, like, this used to not be, you know.
Well, I mean, other than the main character kind of hinting that some of these were pagan sites.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've talked about the church a little bit. Got through the first scene. And guys, like, this isn't how it flows in the movie at all, but we need to explain it to you in this way so that it makes sense.
Yeah.
And we're so sorry.
We're front-loading this so slowly just to kind of understand.
Yeah. So Rawhead's on the loose now. The photographer goes back home. And by home, I mean the hotel that him and his wife and 2 children are living in. Eileen. His wife, Eileen, because I thought I might had a joke about come on Eileen. Sorry. It was Eileen. And their two sons. They have a daughter. Well, I don't know what happened to Minty afterwards. But yes, they have their 2 children, Robbie and Minty. I don't know why the little girl's name is Minty, but it is named Minty. And it is very clear the mother is not a fan of Robbie. And you will find out later on in this episode.
Yeah, she is really...
She's not a fan of Robbie.
Really, really mean to her son.
She's not the best mother.
And it's not a plot point. She just... It's kind of bitchy to him.
Yeah, she kind of is.
Maybe. And the kids have Irish accents.
Yeah.
So they've been here way too long.
Yeah, 2 months, I think is what the dad said. We've been here almost 2 months. It's cool. Whatever. His wife with the dirty eyes.
That was weird, too.
Really weird. Come on. Yep. So they're back at the hotel. I'm going to pop my notes up real quick. Because there's a point in the movie where I stopped paying attention, and I think it was when all the shit went down. So, pardon? All right.
Well, the gist of that point was just she doesn't like being there, and they're griping about it.
Yeah, they are griping about it. Okay, it's the part where Rawhead attacks the couple. So, yes. Like, you have that gripe moment of the wife of Howard Hollenbeck, who's like, I don't want to be here anymore. This is dumb. I want to leave. And the husband's like, no, no, no. Like, I want to stay here an extra 2 days, figure out what's going on. Like, I'm really interested in this church. And then it's the husband and the wife who get attacked by Rawhead.
Yeah, the husband finds his barn door open after coming inside.
Yeah.
His wife tells him the barn's open.
Yeah. Dennis and Jenny.
He disbelieves this for way too long instead of just going to do something about it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And when he goes outside, he gets ripped up by Rawhead. Rawhead attacks the home.
Right.
Chases her through the house until he realizes that she's pregnant, at which point his claws retract and he runs away.
Yeah. Afraid of her, almost. Yep. So then some nonsense happens with Howard and his wife. I think it's the part where he's like, you've got dirty eyes.
Yeah, they're flirty and trying to be okay with each other. And
yeah, like they have a strained marriage. Like a strained.
Yeah.
And
that was his compliment, was you have dirty eyes.
Yeah.
That's not a...
I don't know if that's a come on.
I mean, he thinks it is.
Yeah. And she's like, of course I know.
Yeah. and then Orko from He-Man.
Yeah, Orko from He-Man shows up and is like, get the fuck out of my way.
There's an old lady in a white robe and
it was a hood. Red robe.
Red, I'm sorry. Yeah, an old lady in a red robe with a hood on just stands there unapproving and then walks away.
Yeah, Orko was not happy with them at all. So then you go back to the house of Jenny and Dennis, the couple who's been terrorized by Rawhead in the beginning here. And there's, like, a guy who is dropping off some, like, milking equipment, I think. And he realizes that things are not how they should be at their house and goes through it and finds Jenny in the best kind of acting I've ever seen. She screams hysterically at him.
No, this is even better because she doesn't just scream hysterically.
Yeah.
She, like, makes monster gestures with her hands and goes, rawr, rawr, and then, and then screams hysterically.
Oh my god, yeah, she does, doesn't she?
Oh. I don't even understand what that was supposed to be.
She's like, it's like she got caught in that, charades.
Right.
First word, second word, I don't know what you're doing. Does it have four syllables, five? Their friend finds Jenny, and the police are called, and they're told to write down anything that they hear from the woman at all, but the woman's catatonic, like, she's not gonna speak at all to the police. At that point, trying to think, Rawhead travels to a caravan park.
he has it out for the Pikeys, for sure.
Yeah, he does. So he travels to caravan park, and you find Andy and his girlfriend. I don't think they said the girlfriend's name.
And I don't either.
The little brother, and I'm not sure what the situation is, but I think Andy was watching his little brother.
Yes.
And making out with his girlfriend at the same time.
Yes.
And his little brother was being annoying, and instead of going to a separate room to go make out with said...
Because they live in trailers.
Trailers.
Because they're Pikeys.
Yeah. They ended up leaving the caravan to go out in the woods and start making out with each other. Well, the girlfriend didn't want to do it, but Andy was like, no, let's go and talk in private.
Yeah, and there's a weird weird subplot there, too, where the girlfriend told him, like, we need to have a serious talk.
Yeah, we don't know what the serious talk ever was about, guys. No, we don't.
I thought maybe it was going to lead to she also was pregnant, and so Rawhead didn't attack her.
Right.
Reinforcing the theme.
Right.
No.
Would have been good.
Just didn't go anywhere.
Didn't at all. So they go off into the woods to make out, and the little brother's locked into the caravan, eventually escapes out of it, finds a toy that he had been playing with and his brother took from him.
Yeah, just to be a dick.
Just to be a dick. Smashed on the ground. So he assumed his brother fucking smashed it. It was Rawhead.
Yep.
During this entire time, from the distance it took him to travel from Jenny and Dennis's house to the caravan park, he's been dragging Dennis's body.
Mm-hmm.
And not, like, over his shoulder or, like, cradling him like a baby. Like, we're talking toddler getting ready for bed, dragging your pillow.
Sack of potatoes.
Sack of potatoes into the forest. So, Rawhead strings Dennis up by a tree and ends up, like, eating him.
Like, I think that was supposed to be the implied.
Right.
It really looks more like he's making out with his dead body.
A lot of times it looks like Rawhead's making out with things. And maybe that's where they were bringing in the sexualization.
And then there's just a few little scrapes here and there on it.
It's not good.
I don't think it was even that. You're giving them too much credit. They just don't know what to do with it.
All right. little boy, Neil. Neil was the little boy's name.
Yeah. Neil Johnson.
Neil Johnson and Andy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Look.
The tombstone is the only reason we know. that was an impressive waveform.
Right. Okay.
That's the only reason we know that was the situation with the brothers.
Right.
Because the Andy's tombstone at the end had Johnson on it.
Yeah.
And the police later mentioned that Neil's last name was Johnson.
Exactly.
That's the only indication we have.
Only thing that we have that those two were the siblings.
Yep.
At all. Well, where was I? Oh, yeah. Dennis is strung up. Neil walks in on him eating Dennis, runs back to the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Rawhead pays no attention to the fucking kid at all.
Right.
Just lets the kid run off to the camp again, and he's like, no, oh, no, nah, nah, and everybody's like, what's wrong with little Neil? We don't know. Meanwhile, Neil's brother and his brother's girlfriend are out in the forest, and the girlfriend's like, hey, I hear something. No.
Right.
And he accuses her of being a tease.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, no, I said, let's go back to the caravan, and they're like, fine, we'll go back to the caravan. They start walking, and they walk in on Rawhead.
Right.
And Rawhead actually pays attention to them.
Yep.
As opposed to the little boy. So Rawhead starts chasing them through the forest and grabs a hold of Andy. So when the girl comes out of the forest clearing, I think her name was Katrina.
Yes, you're right, it was.
I think it was Katrina. Yep. They come out of the clearing of the forest. She's hysterical and trying to describe what she saw.
Yep. And I think she doesn't... I don't think she even knows that Andy's not with her.
No, she doesn't know that Andy's not with her.
Because she's still holding his severed hand.
Yeah, Andy's severed hand is there, so they didn't have their talk. That's why Rawhead ate him. So then, let's see, what happens after...
She stops and goes,
huh? And if you guys don't know, Bill just did a pantomime of him looking at a hand and then shoving it down the front of his pants. Audio does not pick up visual.
I pantomime a lot on doing Japanese.
But you guys don't know it.
Yeah, you don't, but I do it all the time.
And I bet you Andy doesn't say anything about it.
He does, he just cuts it out.
Oh, Jesus. That's standing.
I do that when people are on the phone, too. I just, like, pantomime stupid shit they're talking about.
Okay, so this is where I got kind of, like, nitpicky about my notes. So more police are coming to the caravan site.
Right.
To investigate Andy's death and all that, and they're taking little Neil in for questioning and all that. Nothing else happens with Neil's girlfriend at that point. Like, she's done.
Or Andy's girlfriend.
Andy's girlfriend.
Yeah, we never see her again.
No, she's done.
Yep.
She's done. Like, nothing else happens with her. Howard decides to go, they switch back to Howard and his wife, and Howard decides to go on a walk, which is weird. I don't know how the male body works.
You don't?
In a certain way. Well, I mean. So, my thought process is that normally after banging your wife, you don't want to just go out for a jog.
Sandwich.
A sandwich is one thing, but like, do you want to put on pants and be like, listen, honey, I need to go walking.
No, not usually.
Not usually. No. And I bet you you're not in the minority for that. I feel like you're in the majority of, I am going to go and not put pants on and make a sandwich.
I don't even want to be the one to get the sandwich, but...
Yeah, but...
But I'm a gentleman, so I do.
Right. But point being is that you're not like, oh, God damn it. You're the best person to review this with. Normally, like, you've just, like, hit on your wife in public, and you've been like, you've got dirty eyes, honey. And, you know, Orko's gotten pissed at you.
You offended an Irish widow.
Yeah, you know. You're like, how dare you with your sexiness? And then, like, you go home, and, like, during the spans of two teenagers making out and two men getting eaten, you have sex. And then afterwards, you're just like, gotta go jog.
Apparently.
You know. So, yeah, no, Howard leaves his wife alone so he can go walk in the Irish countryside and think about all the mistakes he's made in his life. And I'd like to think that when he's walking, he's like, why'd I let her name our daughter Minty?
Why don't I understand the metric sizes for condoms?
Yeah, exactly. But it's during this walk that Howard finds Rawhead and gets kind of spooked out by him. Because that's the first time Howard's ran into him at
this point. It's just like he's just randomly standing on a cliffside or something.
Yeah, like they're just kind of like eyeing each other, which is weird.
Yeah, which is out of character for this creature too, because it's just just dick murdering everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, why should, you know, Howard matter? Or maybe it was the fact that Howard had just had sex with his wife and he was smelling the... I don't know. I think I'm giving the people who made this movie way too much credit by putting in subtle, like, hints of sexuality into this.
I think you probably are.
Yeah.
Because not to get too graphic with it, but from the book, how that was explained,
yeah,
the only way that would make sense is if she was had been on her period while they had sex.
Right.
Because that was the other thing that scared him.
Yeah.
Which makes more sense to the pregnancy, actually.
Yeah.
Because in the book, they talk about him, like, raping and impregnating
women. Yeah.
So that would be something he wouldn't do, I would think, if that was also his weakness.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, a menstrual cycle might be something that had power against him, or... I don't know. I think I'm thinking too hard about it.
Yeah, too. I think we're thinking too hard about this movie that was not a very good movie.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, the father, Howard, runs into Rawhead Rex. And not, like, really, but, like, the cliff thing.
Yeah, they see each other.
They see each other. So then the... He ends up going to the police and reporting what he saw because it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that he's crazy. They're like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Well, they think he saw a cow.
Yeah, they do. They think he saw a cow. I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, they thought he saw a cow. So then he gives up, goes back to the church to see if he can find the records. Howard goes to the church to see if the priest or the head of the church
mm-hmm.
has found the records for it. And the priest says, no. They're gone. I don't know where they went to at all.
And the guy's like, you mean they're stolen? He's like, probably, I guess.
Yeah, like,
I told you I can't find them. They're not where they're supposed to be.
Right. Exactly.
I guess.
Maybe. So then Howard ends up leaving the priest and going back into the church and taking photos of the stained glass windows and just different things around.
Right.
When all of a sudden, like, Captain McDickhead shows up and grabs Howard's camera, throws it on the ground, and stomps on it. It's just like, get the fuck out.
That's Father McDickhead.
Father McDickhead.
Well, he's Irish, so it'd be yeah. Father O'Dickhead.
Oh, Father O'Dickhead, yeah. Sorry. But yeah, he grabs his camera and stomps it.
Right.
For no reason.
Yeah, not really any...
He's like the paparazzi. He's like, it's almost as if Howard is the paparazzi. Sorry. I can't speak. I was like, paparada.
Paparada. It's almost like he's the pepperoni.
It's almost like he's the pepperoni. And the fucking priest is the Mozilla Firefox. I don't know where I was going with that. Oh my god. Photo, his camera destroyed. And at that point, I think that's when him and his family decide to leave Ireland.
No, they don't even decide to leave Ireland. They decide to go to Dublin. Just to leave the country.
Oh my gosh.
Like, no, not leave the country of Ireland.
Right.
To leave the countryside and go into the city of Dublin.
Oh yeah, because I think the wife wanted to go there.
Yeah.
Like, she made it a very big thing that she wanted to go there instead of being where she was. So then, yeah, they are driving along the Irish countryside and the wife sees a scarecrow.
Yeah.
And instead of, after everything he's found about Rawhead, instead of continuing to drive, Howard decides to put the car in reverse and check out the scarecrow.
Rawhead aside.
Right.
If I'm driving somewhere in the country.
Right.
And my wife sees, like, a weird scarecrow or something, and just says, I saw something weird over there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go back. Like, I don't care. It's probably nothing. If I then know there is a serial murderer around,
right.
I doubly am not stopping.
No.
But I don't know why you would have stopped even in a mundane situation.
Exactly.
Like, okay, you saw a scarecrow.
So, they drive past the scarecrow. They go back in reverse to look at the scarecrow, and then they continue driving. At that point, they cut back to the police, who have photos that this Neil boy has been drawing for them.
That was weird too, because he didn't say, this is what I saw. He's not talking. He's not being communicative. They gave him some paper. He drew a monster.
Yeah.
You know how many monsters I drew just because I had paper and I was bored?
Quite a few.
When you're a 10-year-old boy, it's just something you do. Right. He's sitting there reading X-Men comics. Or no, that was not him. That was,
Robbie.
Yeah, so bring that back. But, yeah. He's sitting there watching war movies, playing with robots.
Yeah.
He drew a monster.
Right.
Well,
and then they were looking at the monsters, the monster that he drew, and was like, oh, this actually sounds like the description that the Yank told us about.
But it didn't, really. Yeah. All he said was it had red eyes, which, of course, you're going to draw a monster with red eyes.
Yeah.
And he said it wasn't human, it was big.
Yeah.
Now, if he said it, like, had an elongated kind of horse's face and fangs and a mohawk and...
Yeah.
Then we might get somewhere.
I mean, heavy metal, punk rock, Beta Ray Bill.
yeah, punk rock Beta Ray Bill. That would have got somewhere.
Right.
Especially if the kid's drawing actually looked like that, because it didn't. It just was like, ah, here's a mouth, man.
Yep, make it look scary.
Yep, I don't think they even showed the kid the mask to draw the creature from.
Probably not.
Or had somebody else that could draw, like, reasonably create it.
Right.
I don't know. Again, it was just one of those small details that would have enhanced the movie to be there, and instead it just was kind of a, who cares?
Yeah. They go, so they're like, oh, the guy was right.
Like, I shouldn't have to fill in this many details on my own.
No.
In my head.
No, you should not. It should not have been that. You should not have had to fill in those many details on your own. Flip back to Howard and his family driving along. Minty, the daughter, which I don't know why her name was Minty, has to go pee.
Right.
Okay. And there's, like, no place they can pull over to, like, you know, have her actually use a restroom, so they pull off to the Irish country, pull off to the side of the road, and tell her just to go into this field and potty.
Mm-hmm.
Minty is, like, what, 4 or 5?
Probably somewhere in there. Maybe 6.
Maybe 6. Okay. They're in the Irish countryside. The mother is like, go on out and go pee.
Yeah, she's fine. She's got to grow up eventually.
Yeah, she's... And we're not even, like, bullshitting you guys. Like, that is exactly what she says to her husband.
And how she said it. Like, yeah. She's totally uninterested.
Yeah, she doesn't care. Her daughter is 4, maybe 6.
And again, if there was some explanation of this mother is having depression, or if she's got some reason that she's angry with the kids, or just any sort of subplot to explain why she just seemingly gives no shits about these kids.
Exactly.
But there isn't. She just doesn't care.
No, she does not.
And maybe it's just the actress was just sick of the kids or something, but...
Right.
Like, the way they wrote it, the way they explained it, or didn't explain it, it just...
Yeah. So, like, poor little Minty is about to go off into the country, go off into a field to pee on her own, but Howard's like, no, like, I'm gonna go with you, sweetie. Like, seriously?
Right.
She's like, she's not even. So he goes out there with her, and she ends up screaming because she finds a dead rabbit.
Right. And the parents run out to
comfort
investigate.
Her. Yeah. Meanwhile, Robbie is in the car, still reading the comic book.
Yep.
And Rawhead finds Robbie.
And does what you expect.
Yep. Does exactly what you expect him to do with Robbie.
Leaves a buddy comic book and a foot.
Yeah. And the father, Howard, had no problem opening up the gate to this, like, little meadow area.
Yep.
To get Minty into the field so that she could potty.
Also has no trouble opening it, him and his wife, to get back into the field after she screams.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, as Rawhead is dragging his only son out of this vehicle, he is paralyzed with the fact that he doesn't know how to operate a gate.
Yeah, right up until the fact that the kid's gone and dead.
And then he,
like,
opens the gate.
Like 10 seconds later, and then he just... It's like, stand there in a moat.
Yeah.
While the kid's dead. Okay, kid's dead, now you can come out. And he just, like, opens the gate and walks out.
And yeah. Well, and then it gets better, because you would think, okay, that's fine. He opened the... Well, he was startled. Finally got the gate finally opened the gate for himself and ran off to get his kid.
But it wasn't. He was almost like... It was almost like he was... The actor.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably a bad director.
Right.
Bad actor. I don't know.
Right.
But it's almost like he was standing there holding the door of the gate still while he was yelling.
Like it. Yeah.
To keep the door from flopping around while he was yelling against it. Like, he was holding it tight against his body.
So it
wouldn't move around.
Yeah.
And then he opens it 10 seconds later and walks out.
And you would think after the 10 seconds and walking out to go after Rawhead would be enough. No, he goes up to his car and shuts the car door and then goes after Rawhead.
Yeah, I have no explanation.
No, we have no explanation for this, guys, at all. So obviously Rawhead's took and Robbie. Mm-hmm. They go back to the police to report it.
Well, with the foot severed and laying there and blood everywhere.
Yeah.
They go to, like, there's no, they go to the police, they think he might be, they look for him. It's just like, next scene, we're in the police station, and he's dead.
Yeah. You want to explain to me why my son's dead?
Yep.
Then there's a scene where Rawhead's back at the caravan park, because that's his favorite place to be.
Yeah, he definitely has something against Spikies.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the women in the movie haven't been attractive. I don't want to say that.
They have been... Let me think about this for a second.
Okay.
I don't say this.
Right.
Because I haven't... There's been nothing wrong with women in the movie, the way they look at all.
No.
But they can't... maybe because of the budget, maybe because of location, right. maybe because of time frame, or some combination thereof.
Right.
None of them are Hollywood attractive.
No.
They're all just plain people.
Yeah. They're everyday people that you would see.
Yeah.
Though it makes sense, too, because the story is supposed to be, like, an everyday kind of a...
Yeah, but not, these days when they do that, they still cast, you know, everybody there has to be models.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're just plain people you would see every day and not take any note of one way or the other.
Exactly. Yeah. They're everyday pretty, yep. I guess is the best way to put it. But there's a caravan scene where these people are talking, and you've got an older couple and then a slightly older couple. I don't know how old they were, the other couple, but, like, I know the guy had some rockin' eyebrows.
And a beard.
Did he have a beard?
Yeah.
Dude, I was so distracted by the eyebrows.
Real grungy beard and eyebrows and...
So, like, this guy's eyebrows looked like two very bushy caterpillars about to have a baby. Like, they were, like, meeting at this party in the center of his face, and I wanted to be a part of that party.
It was, I was gonna say, it was the eyebrow version of a Eiffel Tower.
It really was, dude. Like, that is what this was. It was an amazing brow. Boom. Anyways.
Like, he had three eyebrows, but one of them was between the other two.
Yeah!
And they're high-fiving over his back.
They did. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring up that, like, up until this point, like, most of the women are nothing out of the ordinarily Hollywood standard of, you know, beautified or sexy or whatever, is because there's this one lone woman.
Who was definitely hired as a model.
Who was hired as a model.
She has no lines.
None. Except for,
Well, yeah. She has no actual words.
No actual words at all.
One reaction is she's yanked out the window and her top's pulled off.
Yeah. Literally one reaction. And it's not even, like, I don't think even Rawhead was the one who pulled her top off. I think it was the unibrow guy.
Yeah, trying to pull her back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was trying to pull her back in. And instead of, like, grabbing her hips, he grabs the front of her shirt and just yanks.
Yep.
And then she's pulled out of the caravan.
Yep. It was just a...
A gratuitous nudity scene.
There was somebody standing off camera with a checkboard and going, tits.
Yep, pretty much. And that's the only, like, there's no explanation to it. There's no, like, plot point for it at all. It's just boobs to see boobs.
Yep. I don't know that we even actually see her die.
We don't.
I think we just, she's yanked out, her top comes off.
She's thrown.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's when he flips the caravan over.
Yeah. Flips the caravan over. People try to karate chop him.
He stands there and shakes his fist at the sky.
He rampages and then he leaves.
Yep.
And it's about here where I was like, no more notes. Because we're good. So there's a lot of flipping back and forth with this movie, guys.
Yeah, the scenes are very short, very disjointed.
Yeah.
A lot of characters.
Way too many characters. In fact, you said at one point that they all looked alike.
There's a lot of just generic 30 to 40 something white guys with short brown hair.
Yeah.
Like, I really lost track of who was who if they weren't, you know, the one priest is bald.
Yeah.
You know, the wife has red hair.
Yeah.
Like, those few characters with, like, actual cosmetic tell that I could keep my eye on. Right. Everybody else, I was just like, okay, which one was that just did that?
Yeah. Caravans and flipped. The Holland backs are still at the police station. They haven't left the police station yet. There's been calls about Rawhead being sighted,
mm-hmm.
and he's heading towards the church. They get a phone call from the priest saying that he's being attacked.
Right.
But before the priest even calls about the attack, there's the unholy baptismal that happens with...
Jeez.
Yeah.
The head of the church, the head priest, the head whatever, sees the evil clergyman of whatever kneeling in the graveyard with Rawhead just peeing all over him.
Yeah.
Peeing like he's been buried underground for 1,000 years and hasn't taken a leak once. I mean, that would have been the first thing I did, though. I wouldn't have waited for nightfall to find a priest to pee on before I...
Or, like, days later.
Yeah.
You know, I would have been like, oh. I mean, hell, I'm surprised that wasn't what caused him to wake up in the first place.
I've had those mornings.
Right.
And see, again, here's another fault of the movie.
Yes.
We see this scene. It's gross.
Totally.
It's disturbing.
Yeah.
It's we find out later, essentially, it's a baptism. It's a blasphemous mockery of a baptism.
Right. Actually, I don't know if we even find that out in the movie.
He says, let him baptize you like he baptized me.
Okay.
I don't think we actually find it out. I think there's one line where he says something about it, about him being baptized or something. You're right. I probably filled it in because I read the story.
Right, because I think in the original story, like you were mentioning,
they make it clear. That's what
they make it clear, and I think in this movie, he's very much Renfield from like the Dracula kind of mythology.
Yeah, exactly.
To Rawhead,
and I don't remember he was him being that Renfieldy in the original.
No, and I don't think he turned Renfieldy until he got his unholy baptism.
Right. Right.
I think if it's that, I think they might have mushed together the ideas of the photographer and the clergyman together.
Well, they merged together the altar MacGuffin and the baptism too.
Right.
Because, like I said, I think that altar MacGuffin was just kind of a weird detail. It wasn't like the moment he flipped his shit.
Right.
But if you're going to include that, it's a horror movie. It's a it's thematically appropriate for what they're doing.
Yeah.
If you're going to include something like that, make it stick and make it gross.
Yeah.
Because basically, the next time you see him, he's dry. It's never brought up.
Yeah.
It's not a not an issue.
No, it's not.
And I just think if it was me doing it,
right?
If I'm the special effects artist,
he would be gross.
Or the director.
Yeah.
You know, I would have mixed up cornstarch and lemonade, made some sort of extra viscous, nasty, and I would have made sure it was in every. I don't care if we're a day later and you're. We're going to drench you in it again.
Yeah.
To make that detail pop.
Yeah.
To drive home the grossness of it and the blasphemy of it. And
yeah, people need to know this.
Yeah. It's basically like they did it, and then the next day, they went back to shooting. The guy just put on a fresh priest costume, and
that was it.
They just moved on with the movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, the head of the church is calling the police station about getting attacked. I don't know when it happens, but at some point, Rawhead gets the head of the chief of police out of his vehicle and, like, lovingly gazes into his eyes, and he becomes, like, part of Rawhead's posse.
Yeah, so apparently the P didn't do it so much as just the deep eye stares.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the story did kind of just break down here. It just kind of became chaos.
Yeah, friggin' Howard decides to go back to the church and leave Minty and Elaine alone at the police station. The police show up to, like, gun down Rawhead, but the chief of police is now a part of his team, and he ends up setting everything on fire.
They've dumped gas everywhere.
Yeah.
He shoots into it to start.
Actually, the shot was at the caravan park.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. See, it gets chaos.
It does. But yeah, there was a shot that knocked over gas in the caravan park, and then the chief of police or somebody sets it on fire.
Yeah.
Somehow sets it on fire.
Yeah.
Screams, "It's all for you."
Right, which is a very Omen thing.
It is. And all the cop cars blow up and burn down, and all the cops die.
Right, because none of the cops know how to stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah, the one guy's like literally running like a mummy. Just his arms out, just stumbling around.
Like, was that not something they teach in Ireland? I don't know. Because, like, in
Ireland in the 80s, I don't know.
I don't know. Like, that's all I ever knew, like, growing up in America.
You think somebody would instinctually try something other than run around like a mummy.
Right.
That was never a thing.
They were always like, "You're on fire. Stop, drop, and roll." Yep. Like, I don't know. So, by this point, they're in the church. The priest is dying, visibly breathing while dying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is, too. He's taking these deep breaths in his stomach.
Yeah, you could see it, guys.
It's like he thought the camera was only catching, like, half of his chest. So, if he breathed in his stomach, nobody would notice.
Nobody would notice.
But they were these deep belly breaths that you could very easily see.
Yeah, you could see. And we don't mean he was dying. We mean, like, he was supposed to be dead.
Yeah, he was.
Like, it was a scene between him, a, like, rookie cop, and Howard. And
he gives the cryptic last words.
The altar, it's afraid of it.
Yeah, and then lays there dead for, like, 8 seconds while he breathes the whole time.
Yeah, and the cop even says, "He's gone."
Yep.
And you're just like, "Is he, though? This guy does not have any medical training."
Again, I think that was a direction or editing problem where...
I think so.
Nobody was like, "Yeah, we're going to shoot this from the chest up, so try not to...
Breathe.
Visibly. The actor probably thought, if I breathe in my stomach, they'll pull on tight. And
It'll be fine. And it would have been fine if they would have pulled in
tight. Yeah, I don't think that was the actor's fault at all.
No, I don't think so. So, Howard ends up going into the church to find the altar.
Yep.
And realizes that it's a chest.
Yeah, he pulls the pulls the blanket away, or not the blanket, the coverings away, and it's a real ornate chest.
Yeah.
I don't know what altars look like underneath anyway.
No, I don't.
I grew up Baptist. There was just a pulpit there, and it was hollow because that's where you put...
Ordinarily, altars aren't chests.
They might be hollow.
It might be hollow.
I really don't know. Like I said, growing up, I ever just had the pulpit stand, and that was hollow because that was shelving for, you know, notes and Bibles and...
That's fair.
...whatnot inside of it, so I don't know.
We are not... Well, you have a religion. I don't really... I pick up pieces.
I grew up with it.
Right, I didn't. Full disclosure, heathen. Alright. So, yeah, he opens up the chest and finds this really ugly Isabel Bloom doll.
Well, he tries to open it, and it's glowing red inside.
Oh, yeah, like somebody had a big fart in their car on a hot summer day and just couldn't handle it.
All the smoke rolling out.
Yeah.
So he uses a candlestick to, like, prop it open.
Oh, yeah.
Which also doesn't make sense, because if he needs the candlestick to prop it open, mm-hmm. how can he pick up the thing in the chest in the first place? Like, it's apparently the thing emitting the power.
Right.
And why is it red? Because the power we see come out of it later is...
Blue.
Unless, like, Rawhead... sealed it away, and it sealed Rawhead away, you know.
It so could
they
be
each
one of
had their own powers, or again,
they don't
we should not
it.
Have to fill this much in.
No, we should not. We should not.
And depending on where your listeners are,
yeah,
they may not know what Isabel Bloom's are.
That is true. That is so true. So Isabel Bloom is a company that makes like little stone statues,
colored concrete sculptures.
Yeah,
what it is. It's a local company.
Yeah,
I guess they're world famous.
I guess
from what I understand, but probably not.
As world famous as...
If you've seen them, you know, your mother or grandmother has them.
Yeah.
Your aunt.
Yeah.
And this one looks like an Isabel Bloom of a fat lady with a gigantic distended vagina.
Yeah, like her badge starts at navel and just wraps around.
Yeah, navel is generous.
Yeah.
But...
feels like it starts underneath her cleavage.
It really does. I mean,
it does.
And
it's not like a slit, guys. Like, it's full-on open, spreaded out labia. Like
distended. I mean, it's
you
several
know,
inches away from...
You know it's a vagina.
I mean, it's mostly a vagina with, like, a lady attached to it.
Yeah.
So this is his weapon.
Yes. To defeat Rawhead.
Of choice. I know at one point, even when he was looking at the stained glass...
Yeah.
You see a hand holding that was put in... the wrong position.
Yeah.
And he just keeps saying, like, there's a hand there, so that you can clearly see the statue.
Right.
It's like, there must be a weapon, like a sword or something.
Nope.
And actually, the same image I alluded to earlier, the penis totem pole from the movie. If the totem pole is a penis.
Right.
This thing has a cock ring on it.
It does.
And one of the images of the cock ring is basically a version of this fertility goddess symbol.
Yeah.
Quite clearly at the base of it.
Yeah.
So.
So he gets the lady rock.
The lady rock.
The lady rock.
That is the most polite way I could.
The lady rock. And he's going to defeat Rawhead with the lady rock. And he's just basically standing in a graveyard looking at Rawhead, screaming at this thing to work.
Yeah, holding it above his head. And
yeah.
Like,
say anything.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, he's standing in the graveyard like it's Say Anything, but he's got a vagina over his head.
Yeah, like John Cusack trying to get his girlfriend back. I thought you were going to go with like the Lion King.
Okay, that too.
Everything the light touches. And it does touch a lot. So Rawhead's there. He's about... No! What happens is he gets the vagina rock. The lady rock, excuse me. Is escaping the church, which is now on fire or whatever, or, like, things have been destroyed because the evil clergyman has started to destroy things.
Yeah.
The evil clergyman runs into Rawhead first and is like, he's escaping, he's got the thing that's gonna, like, destroy you, but I couldn't stop him.
Yeah,
you're
gonna have to kill him.
You're gonna have to kill him. And, for whatever reason, Rawhead decides to eat him. Maybe because he failed at stopping this guy from...
That's how he took it. For one, you fucked up. That was like telling your vampire master, like, sorry, I couldn't stop him from getting that garlic. You're going to have to kill him.
Right.
First of all, the vampire's like, well, that's what I hired you for.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
Right.
And you fucked up.
So I got to eat you.
So I'm going to have to eat you.
Yeah. But it's a very sensual, slow eating.
Again, it's that same bite thing he does. I think it's a mask.
Yeah.
I think it's all distended and not where his face is. And he's just, like, pressing his mask until it stops, and then just shaking his head back and forth.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even
Yeah. I mean, it's goofy looking.
It is.
But the guy's very enraptured, and he's very much like, oh, yeah, eat me. And it was probably the sexiest, like, scene where people were, like, torn apart since Lena Quigley in Return of the Living Dead. She was trash, the one who got on the grave. Anyway.
I could see that scene being played out sensually and being very disturbing. With the right acting, the right directing.
Right.
The right budget. I could definitely see that working that way.
Oh, yeah, totally. So, evil clergyman is dead. For whatever reason, Elaine now is in the graveyard. Elaine is, of course, Howard's wife.
Eileen,
because of the come on Eileen. I gotta keep remembering that joke.
And she works at IHOP.
Ha! Dumb. Okay, so Howard's wife is there, and there's no sign of Minty.
She owns a cow with two legs. It's lean beef. It's better than a cow with no legs.
What's that? Ground beef. Bill will be here all night with his dad jokes.
You tell him a dad.
Right? Sometimes I laugh at things that Dash will post on Facebook, and I'll be like, oh, I'll laugh at that. But I'm going to laugh at that.
we dad joke back and forth constantly.
Oh, my God. His wife is there. No sign of their daughter at all. Which is weird because...
She pretty much just...
Abandoned her.
She vanishes in the movie.
Yeah.
Like...
She does. She vanishes.
That peeing scene was the last time we see her, I think. She might have been in the background of the police station.
Maybe.
But I don't remember her.
Right. But, yeah, no, they're nothing. Well, I think at one point, like, before Howard leaves the police station, she's cradling Minty in her arms.
Okay, so the police station's the last time we see her.
Yeah, but now she's in this graveyard without her daughter.
Yep.
And Howard's trying to defeat Rawhead with the...
She just taps the desk, Sergeant. Take care of her.
Yeah.
That time's nine.
Yeah, exactly. She's a grown-up. She needs to learn how to do this on her own.
Yeah.
And I wish I could say that this mother was very sad and distraught over her son dying, but
she's not.
She wasn't.
She doesn't particularly seem to care that her son died, her husband's going to get killed.
Yeah.
Like, she shows up to save the day, but she doesn't seem to really care that she's saving the day.
No.
Like, I could have seen some anger from her.
We see nothing.
Nothing. Just, like, she shows up, she picks it up.
Yeah, basically she's like, why are you here, and why are you late? I have things I need you to do, Howard.
Right.
All right. This jar of pickles is not going to open itself. I don't know why she has a jar. She doesn't have a jar of pickles. But, yeah, basically that's the kind of attitude she has. And
she just comes in there to take care of her own vagina.
Yeah. That's a smart joke.
Yeah.
So she picks up this lady rock.
Poor Howard. Insignificant.
Right. Picks up this lady rock.
Did you date Howard?
Did I date a Howard?
Well, not... You can cut this.
Yeah.
I was being kind of mean there. But,
right.
Like, didn't you date Howard? Or somebody like Howard?
Oh, yeah! We know the guy! I'm going to cut this off.
Shows up, can't compete. Woman has to take care of her own vagina.
Dated a lot of Howards. Oh, that makes me sad.
And that makes me laugh.
I think you've met most of them.
Probably.
Yeah, you've met all of them. All the Howards. Damn it. Sam needs to reflect on her life right now.
Making other people reflect sadly on their life makes me happy.
See, I try about all the Howards that I was with. Not necessarily Howards, but Howard-like.
Yeah, no. All the Howards. I'm sure you've dated a few of them.
The Aerosmith song.
I mean, yes. Fellow podcasters are not your rock bottom.
No, they are not. Nope. Mm-mm. No.
In fact, fellow podcasters might be in your top 3 to 5.
So yes, he picks up the rock. She picks up the rock because Howard's useless. And she has to take care of her own needs.
And a Georgia O'Keeffe painting lady.
Yeah, it comes out.
Let me redo that.
Okay.
A lady dressed like a Georgia O'Keeffe painting bursts from the vagina.
Yeah.
Of the rock.
She's just like, whoa. The rock vagina.
And then disappears.
Right.
Immediately.
Right.
And Howard goes, oh, it had to be a woman.
Yeah, because, like, apparently women are the only ones who are allowed to operate rocks.
Right. And then mean, come on, it's not a stove.
God damn it, Bill. It's only if it's gas, if it's electric. Like, I don't understand the electric ones. I'd rather have a gas stove, okay? It's a preference thing.
I have an electric stove, and the only reason I have it was just because I really didn't want to run gas.
That's fair.
In my house. Like, I had a gas stove, and I liked it. I kind of wish I had it. But where the stove is placed in my kitchen is not where it originally was, so there had been a lot of extra piping done to run the gas. And gas always makes me a little nervous anyway.
Right.
So I just thought, you know, it's going to feel safer to have an electric stove, and I can always... I still haven't done it yet, but if I really want a man cook, I can get a grill, but I just...
So my friends, Ross and Mike did that.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to the part where she defeats Rawhead with the vagina stone.
Yeah, once the... the ghost lady from the stone disappears.
Yeah.
Once the ghost lady from the vagina stone disappears.
Yeah.
I shit you not, listeners. Basically, the vagina on the stone goes pew, 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 bang, bang with G.I. Joe blue lasers.
It does.
Except they fly around the graveyard for a while. Yeah. Some of them. Some of them turn to lightning.
Yeah.
And then Rawhide Rex gets old.
Really old.
And falls through a graveyard.
Yep.
Gravestone.
Yep. End of the movie.
And then the thing falls in with him.
Yep.
One last scene.
Oh, yeah, the one with Neil and Andy.
We see Andy Johnson's gravestone, which is why we now know that they are the ones that are brothers.
Right.
Neil is playing at the graveyard for some reason.
Oh, I think he was just putting flowers on his brother's.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, okay, he was putting flowers on his brother's tomb.
I just figured he had a robot, like, ha ha, fucker, you're not going to break this one.
Right.
And old Rawhead pops his head out of the ground.
Yep.
Now end of movie.
End of movie. Roll credits.
Roll credits.
So yeah, that is Rawhead Rex, which I can understand why Clive Barker does not blame this movie at all.
Yep.
I'm honestly surprised that this movie has not been remade.
I think that ultimately amounts to Hollywood is stupid.
Yeah.
They only want to remake things that were already popular.
Right.
Which is never going to work.
No.
At very least, you get something decent. Mm. You get an okay remake.
Yeah.
You get a strong opening weekend.
Yeah.
You're not going to make art, you're not going to make classics that way.
No.
The only time they've been smart about it is when they Fright Night is a great example.
Fright Night is a good example.
A movie, mind you, was a cult classic, was better than Rawhide Rex for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've said this on Tuning Japanese a bunch of times too.
Right.
That take something moderately successful and cultish.
Yeah.
Or take something that wasn't successful at all, like Rawhide Rex.
Yeah.
But has an interesting premise.
Yeah.
And take a chance on it. Give it to somebody intelligent. Give it to a good writer. Give them free rein to turn loose. Let it have an R rating. I'm sick of these friggin' PG horror movies.
They need to have the R rating.
This one would definitely have to.
Yeah, it would have to.
It's possible to make creepy PG, PG-13 horror movies.
Yeah.
But it's not the rule.
No, and with the heavy themes of sexuality that are in the short story... They would have to be an R rating.
And the gore, even.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This one would have to be R rating.
Yeah.
But give it an R rating. Give it a talented director.
Yeah.
Roll the dice, and this could turn into something really, really cool.
Right. And, I mean, if people... Because people are always on board for making sequels to something. That's fine. Go ahead and do it with Rawhead. Because there's another short story in the Books of Blood called The Skins of Our Fathers. In which it's a group of, like, demigod monsters who are searching for this woman who's pregnant with one of their own.
Right.
You know? Or she might have already given birth to him. But they mention in the story Rawhead, like you said earlier, he goes around and tries to impregnate women.
From the short story.
From the short story. So if they took more of the liberties from the short... Took more from the short story, they could do a sequel. And I would love to go see a monster movie with Rawhead Rex, and then...
You know, they could even take the Books of Blood.
Yeah.
And make an old-school, 80s-style anthology movie.
They've done that with at least one of the short stories from the Books of Blood.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, it's called The Yattering and the Jack.
Is that the weird...
It's the one with the man who is being terrorized by a demon.
But he's ignoring it?
Yeah, he's ignoring it.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember if that was Amazing Stories or if that was...
Tales from the Dark Side.
The movie? Or the show?
No, the show.
Okay.
It's a Tales from the Dark Side.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
But I mean, even making one of the anthology movies, like the Tales from the Crypt movie.
Yeah.
Or I would love a good anthology show, too, certainly. Right. But
oh, that reminds me. So it's part of the horror movie news that I didn't say earlier, but in the fall, Shudder is going to start doing a Creepshow anthology series.
That'd be awesome.
Exclusive to Shudder. So, yeah, like, that's something.
So, I probably won't get to see it, but...
You can use my subscription.
Oh, fair enough.
Okay. You'll see it. Damn. That and Joe Bob Briggs, if you want to see him. Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs. He was a horror host. Look him up. He's
okay.
Yeah. Anyways.
I got nothing.
That's right. But yeah, no, like, an anthology series would be good.
Right. Or anthology movies, a set of anthology movies, or a TV show, either one.
Right. Because as it is right now, for the Books of Blood, we've got the self-titled Book of Blood, which is based on the short story On Jerusalem Street.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Midnight Meat Train, which I feel is grossly underappreciated.
That was an adequate movie, certainly.
Yeah.
That was... the idea of a predatory pre-human civilization, especially when masquerading as human, has always been one of my favorite things. I find it creepy.
Right.
The very idea that we have the Uncanny Valley, like, we're on the lookout for things that are almost human but not quite. Right.
Yeah.
The fact that clowns are scary because they are making themselves up as exaggerated humans and we don't quite.
Yeah.
Like, that is something I've always found both troubling and interesting.
Yeah. There was Dread, which Dread had potential. It's not as bad as Rawhead, but Dread did have some potential in it. Trying to think what else has been... But yeah, that's about it for the Books of Blood.
Right.
I hear Candyman is based on some of the later volumes.
You know, I did hear that it was... But, I mean, Candyman's a pretty straightforward boogeyman.
Yeah.
Bloody Mary. I mean, don't get me wrong, Candyman's a masterpiece.
Right.
But it's not the most innovative plot in the world.
Right.
There's an angry ghost, something bad happened to it. It killed people, and you say his name in the mirror.
Yeah.
That was the one that had the acting and the script and the detail... And the setting, all that was done right, so it became a masterpiece, even if the plot element was a little bit...
Taken from other places.
Yeah, or just not the strongest in the world.
Right.
It's an angry ghost that's trying to kill a lady, is ultimately what the plot boils down to.
Yeah. And it was filmed on... Yeah, like you said, it... that was the plot of the story, but it had so much more for it.
Exactly.
You know? Which, likewise, if Rawhead would have had all those things, it would have been good, too. And taking even further, like, I feel like the reason Midnight Meat Train was so good was, again, what it was given. It's
right.
A subterranean human race parading around as,
It's not,
you know,
it's not the most original thing in the world.
No, it's not.
It was done well.
It was done very well. You had a great cast for that.
And you can say that about a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Rawhead Rex, as a property, has a theme and a metaphor and a little bit more complicated of a plot that, given the right treatment, could be good.
Right. So, since we're talking about, like, fan theory, fan thoughts about this movie,
mm-hmm.
Who would you want to direct? Who would you want working on the Rawhead Rex remake, if there was such a thing?
You know who really immediately comes to mind?
Who?
And it may not be the most popular thing in the world to say right now.
Okay.
Would be James Gunn.
Right. No, I can understand why you don't think that would be the most popular thing to do.
But Slither was gross.
Slither was totally
Slither gross. Is really not, you know, Guardians aside, as much as I love the Guardians movies.
Right.
Slither is really the one that stands out to me.
Right.
It was gross.
Right.
And it was kind of irreverent and kind of knew it was a little bit silly, which I think you'd almost need
for that.
For this.
Right.
And it had a lot of the psychosexual elements to it,
that
made you uncomfortable, which I think is what this movie needs. I think that would have been a great choice. He would have been a great choice.
He would have been, yeah. So, you say James Gunn. I'm going to have to go with either Lars von Trier, Tom Six, or the Saska twins.
You're going to have to
give
me a little more than that. All right. Not...
So, Tom Six did the Human Centipede movies.
Okay, I haven't seen them to speak on it, but
certainly
no...
Of them.
I know of them, obviously, and that director's not afraid to...
Push the envelope,
sexually. To do the gross things.
Yeah, to do the gross things.
The
Lars von Trier did Antichrist with friggin'... Can I guess her name? Willem Dafoe. He also did Nymphomaniac. He's very big into the grossly hypersexualized stuff.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Right. You're going to have to, like...
I don't really know anything about him.
Yeah, you'll have to Google him as well. And then the Saska twins are currently working on a remake Rabid by Cronenberg.
Okay.
And Cronenberg did the Fly remake with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Cronenberg I'm aware of. Okay, so definitely. And yeah. That would have... He's not working anymore, though, is he?
I don't think he is, but he would have been a good one.
Obviously, he would have been.
Yeah, no, he would have totally been good. And then I suppose, like, as a cop-out, like, just let Clive Barker do it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to just let Clive Barker do it.
Yeah, because he's a director, and he's taken the helm a few times in movies.
Yeah.
There's
no reason not take Clive Barker, make him the director, make him the writer.
Yeah.
There really isn't.
Like, I mean, that's kind of a cop-out for the whole thing. Yeah. And I suppose, like, yeah, no, like, Gunn would have been a really good director to have.
Yeah. So. As somebody who, modern, who...
Right.
Gets the beats they're going for and has a movie out there that gets those beats.
Right.
Yeah, that's who jumps to mind for me.
Right. No, and I get that. That would make sense. But yeah, like, definitely I think there should be a Rawhead remake.
I think there's a lot of these movies. Like I said, I think there's a lot of these that need to be remade.
Yeah.
Could be remade.
Yeah.
Should be remade before... And... Okay. I'll preface this by saying,
okay,
I am not one of the haters.
No.
At all.
No.
But a lot of these that could or should have been made before they remade Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters is about 90% perfect movie.
Yeah.
Really, the ghost blowjob scene's about the one thing I'm like, that we could do without that. That made no sense. The new one was fine.
Yeah.
The cast was fine. The script was fine. The acting was fine. Everything about it was fine. It'd been really great if Ghostbusters wasn't already a thing.
Yeah.
I like all of those women in the cast.
They're all good.
When I can say with certainty that Kristen Wiig is my least favorite cast member.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
It is.
It just didn't really need to happen.
No.
There's no reason to do it.
No. And not to cut you off, but likewise, Nightmare on Elm Street didn't need to be remade.
Yeah, exactly. And they're doing it again.
Friday the 13th didn't need to be remade.
And there's no reason to redo it.
Texas Chainsaw didn't need to be remade.
Probably not. That one, at least, I think, brought a few things to the table more. No pun intended. The remake of that's the one that had, like, Arlie Ermey in it, and it focused on the family a little more.
It did focus on the family a little bit more.
So
that was a little bit better.
I feel like there was... Maybe it didn't need to, but it brought something new to the table when they did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that... Or Godzilla, even. Why keep doing Godzilla?
They don't need to.
Godzilla's great.
Yeah.
But there are Godzilla movies.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them. They're good. We can go back and watch them.
The Omen didn't need to be remade.
No, there's no reason The Omen needed to be remade. At all. Like, and again, if I had never seen the original three.
Yeah.
It would have been a fine to better than fine movie. As it was, it was perfectly serviceable, but it didn't change the world. It wasn't really art. It just sort of redid something that was already out there and was already good.
Yeah.
So,
I've been lately with recordings with Zoe, and I'll be posting them soon. At the end of the show, she draws out from a bag what our next episode is that we're going to do the compare contrast to. All
right, well, let me reach
out
here.
Yeah, reach out to your sack.
Let's see.
So, Bill, what's the next movie you want to do a one-on-one review on? No remake, just...
Oh, I thought I was going to have to sell you guys with something goofy.
No, we don't have to. We've already got Valentine's Day.
Oh, well, you kind of put me on the spot.
I did kind of put you on the spot. It could even be a recent horror movie. I just need to be able to go buy it.
I have a thought.
Okay.
And it might piss you off.
Okay.
So you might not do it.
What is it?
But I think we would at least get a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
And a lot of back and forth out of analyzing It Follows.
I hate you.
Because I know you hate the movie.
You're a dick.
No.
But I'll do this discussion with you.
But you don't even... Yeah. I know you hate it.
I do.
I don't feel as strongly about it as you do.
Okay.
I don't feel as strongly about it either way.
Right.
But I don't feel as strongly about it as you do.
All right.
And I would really like to dig into why.
Okay. So, that'll be our episode. The next episode you and I do will be an It Follows episode.
And maybe we'll edit it out if you don't want to. Or
right.
We can't come up with something. But
right.
Maybe I'll come up with something better, but...